Hi, Steve. How are you?
All right. How you doing, man?
Good. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Got Steve Terrell joining us right now live on PMP Network. He's an Atlantic Records recording artist and quite the history in music Steve Terrell has. We're going to talk to him about the brand-new CD called A New Standard, but I also want to talk about your history. And, in fact, I'm a big Fox TV fan. And I remember a show called The Heights, which had a real catchy tune called How Do You Talk to an Angel? You actually wrote that one, didn't you?
I sure did.
So you've written, what other kind of songs would we know that you have written? I know you've produced quite a few as well.
Well, that's the biggest hit that I've written. But I wrote another song a couple of years later for Jamie Walters when he was on 90210 called Hold On, which was also a big hit.
That's right, yeah.
I've written songs that Ray Charles has done and Elvis Presley and lots of different people, but those were my two biggest hits as a writer.
Wasn't Jamie also in The Heights?
Yeah, he was a star of it, you know.
Yeah, guy's a really talented singer.
He is. He's a great guy too, and that was really an interesting process how that happened. I had done a movie for Fox called The Five Heartbeats, which was a kind of the story of the Temptations. Robert Townsend directed it, and right after that, Fox Television, the Commitments was also out right about the same time as the Five Heartbeats,
right.
And Fox decided they were going to do a show about a band, and so they recommended me to Aaron Spelling to do the music. And I went and met with Mr. Spelling, and he thought it would be a good idea for me to be involved in the casting of the show because the people that the actors had to be musicians as well, you know.
Mm.
So we had they had some people in mind, and I remember Jamie was had come and auditioned for me, and he pulled his guitar out and he played this blues song, and it just knocked me out. I mean, the guy looked like James Dean and sounded like Brian Adams, you know, and could play the guitar. I said, this guy's the goods, man. So I called Spelling Television. I didn't speak to Aaron that particular time. I spoke to the president of Spelling, and I said, you should hire this guy Jamie Walters. And they said, well, we've already cast the lead in the show. And I said, well, you know, you're making a mistake if you don't hire this guy. I said, you know, Mr. Spelling's got a bathroom bigger than my house, but he's wrong if he doesn't cast this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we created a part for Jamie. We made him the shy lyricist that was in the script, you know, the guy who didn't know how to express himself that well. There was a character like that in the original pilot, and we turned him into a band member, and that's what gave us the idea to write the song, How Do You Talk to an Angel?
Wow.
Because this guy didn't know how to express himself, you know.
That was a lot more successful than the TV show.
Oh, yeah. The song went to number one in the nation.
Yeah.
And replaced Boys to Men's song Into the Road, which was the biggest hit of all time at the time.
Hmm.
We knocked it out at number one in the nation with our song. It was great.
I've talked to so many singers on this show, probably, you know, hundreds of them, and they always tell me that it's a real special feeling when you write the song that goes to number one.
Oh, yeah. Well, I always think that the most fun of anything in music is to write a song. It's like giving birth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one minute you're sitting in a room with some people and or by yourself or whatever, and you're trying to come up with something, and there's one minute there where you actually do, and a song is born, and everybody looks at each other and they go, hey man, this is pretty cool, you know. And that feeling right then when you've created something from nothing is the best feeling in music, I think, you know.
And when you see it go to number one,
well, that's a totally other
story. That's pretty cool, and of course the monetary rewards are great as well.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
But I think the big thrill is when you create it.
Mm.
You know, when stuff is successful, you know, there's so many things that depend on something being successful, you know, that's out of the artist's control. You know, that song was on a TV show, and they gave it a lot of promotion, and it was able to be heard. So then it was able to be a hit, you know.
Mm.
But some things you do are not able to, you know, they don't get the exposure, and so.
We're talking with Steve Terrell. And one of the things that Steve has done as a producer, a couple of songs that I thought were two of the most beautiful ballads ever recorded, one of them at least won a Grammy, Don't Know Much, duet with Aaron Neville and Linda Ronstadt, and the other one, Somewhere Out There, which also had Linda, but also with James Ingram.
Right.
Two incredible songs that you produced that also, I think, hit number one.
Well, the first one, and again, these are things how when something has its own, you know, the successful things kind of have their own energy, and you can't stop them. But I was working on American Tale, at the time, and my partner Barry Mann wrote that song Somewhere Out There, and he played it for, you know, Steven Spielberg, and they recorded it with the little kids, the little mice in the middle of the movie. And I told Barry when he wrote it, I said, man, that song's a hit, you know. And he said, well, no, I don't have to write a hit for this. This is an animated feature, you know. He was like, don't pressure me, is basically what he was saying. You know, because he got the job, and he was so happy that it didn't depend on him writing a hit song, you know. Because
mm-hmm.
it was, and no, at that time, no one was, you know, there were no contemporary records in animated features. So I said, man, you guys are blowing it. I said, I hear a whole nother way to do that song in my head, you know. So to make a long story short, they gave me a little budget to do a demo after I bothered everybody enough about my idea. And I went in the studio and I recorded the demo of Somewhere Out There.
Mm-hmm.
And people told me, man, you can't have a hit from a cartoon. There hasn't been one in 50 years, you know. And so I it's always the gatekeepers that keep you from doing anything, you know.
Of course.
And so I went in and did it, and someone played it for Steven Spielberg, and he loved it. And he said, whoa, this is great. And then everyone called up, oh, yeah, it's that. We told you that. Yeah, that's going to be right. And so they played it for Linda Ronstadt, and she called me up and loved the demo that I made and asked me if I would work with her and Peter Asher on it. And the rest is history. We recorded it. We put it over the end of that movie, and it went to number one in the nation and
that's
sold,
huge.
You know, millions of copies and set a trend that's still going on today. You know?
Exactly. I mean, look at Lion King had a couple of big hits.
Oh, yeah.
Elton John.
Beauty and the Beast, you know, everything after that. After
that,
now that's the standard. Mm-hmm. You have an animated feature, you have a hit song in it, you know. But that was the first one in a long time.
Well, talking about movies and hit songs, let's talk about Father of the Bride. All those folks out there who saw the Steve Martin movie remember the wedding scene where the voice of someone singing the song The Way You Look Tonight. And of course, that song was a big hit on the commercials. It was on Sinatra had it. Mm-hmm. It was all over the place. But then, Steve, your version was on the movie, and it took off like wildfire.
That was, again, luck, timing, whatever. You know, I started as an artist. I've always sung. I mean, you know, the original Somewhere Out There, I sang with Linda Ronstadt, you know, her and I did it together at the session. And so my voice has always been kind of my instrument in the way that I communicate things. So how do you talk to an angel? I sang it first and played it for them and then taught it to Jamie. So I'm always singing. And what happened with Father of the Bride was I was hired to produce the songs for that wedding reception scene. And I went in, and the director told me he wanted a soulful version of The Way You Look Tonight. Sinatra did it faster, and most people had done it more up-tempo, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted a certain sentiment expressed when Steve Martin walked in and saw his daughter dancing with her new husband for the first time. He wanted those words, you know, someday when I'm awfully low. You know, he wanted those words over that scene.
Mm-hmm.
So I went in the studio. I recorded a track the way I thought it should feel. I put my voice on it because I didn't know who was going to sing it in the movie. I didn't know what they had in mind, and it wasn't my job to worry about that. And so I went to the set, and I was out in the parking lot in between setups, playing it for the director, and I had it real loud. Because I wanted him to go for it, man. I didn't want to have to do it over, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I had it cranked up real loud, and he was in the car listening to it. And by the time it got to the second verse, Steve Martin and Diane Keaton and Nancy Myers, the writer-producer, they all came out into the parking lot and said, "What's that? What's that?" I said, "Well, that's just me, you know." And I said, "Man, we love that." And I said, "Well, you know, great." They said, "Well, you got to be in the movie." So that started the whole thing. Then I ended up singing it in the wedding scene, and when we shot it, it was the biggest day of the movie because it was the reception, you know. So
right.
There's all 500 extras and all the actors and the people from Disney came down, and every time we would do that song, you know,
were you nervous as an actor?
A little bit, yeah, but I mean, you know, all I had to do was sing. I had one line, you know, in the movie, and all I had to do was sing the song, but I was nervous, yeah, and I'll never forget Marty Short came up after I did the first take. Marty Short came up and to the bandstand when the director called cut, and he came up to the bandstand and he spit on the floor and he said, "That's what I think of Harry Connick. We got Tyrell." which kind of eased the tension after everybody got a big laugh, you know. And I'll never forget Marty for that. That was hilarious.
Has Marty invited you on his TV show yet?
Not yet. No, not yet, but hopefully he will. You know, Marty's trying to get his ratings together and everything, and it's I'm going to hope to get on TV starting in January and February.
Yeah.
You know, it's been, we didn't even try to go on, do any television promotion in the months of November and December because it sweeps, and, you know, every television show has a, you know, has a million actors and stuff on, you know.
But I want to talk to you about one thing because we only have a couple more minutes left. And the CD, by the way, is called A New Standard from Steve Tyrell. It's a great CD from Atlantic Records, and I love this kind of music. It's nice that all the music of Count Basie and Frank and Billie Holiday and Benny Goodman and all these people are all coming back again for a new generation of people here, which I think is great.
Well, that was what I was going to tell you, is that when we were recording it, I mean, filming it, young girls would come up to the bandstand and say, "Did you write that song?" The way you look tonight, I mean, you know.
Well, one of the things that I thought was fascinating was the story about how you get the people, the musicians, for the CD.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. This is great.
Well, after we did Father the Bride and then the second movie, I got tons and tons of letters and offers and people saying to me, "Man, you should do an album of standards, you know, or where can we find more of your records?" And it became obvious that it was that I had hit on something with these old songs. But I was, as a record producer, and, you know, I was thinking there's so many albums that have been made, you know, of standards by some of the greatest singers that's ever lived. What would I do differently? And I ran into Louis Belson, who is a great drummer, played with Duke Ellington. He's 75 years old, and he was married to Pearl Bailey. And, I mean, this guy invented cool, you know, this Italian guy married to a black lady in the 40s playing with an all-black band, you know. It's pretty cool. And he and I became friends, and he really loved my stuff in Father the Bride and gave me a lot of encouragement. And I thought, here's a guy who's, this was his music, you know. So we started talking about his contemporaries, Clark Terry and who played with Duke Ellington, and Sweets Edison, rest his soul, who played with Count Basie and Billie Holiday, and, you know, Frank Sinatra and Plas Johnson, who played with, you know, Nat King Cole. He knew all these great instrumentalists, Louis did. And I got the idea to make an album of standards and have these guys from that era come and play the solos on the album with me. And that's what A New Standard is. It's really a collection of the greatest songs really written in the 20th century with some of the national treasures who are now in their 70s and 80s. As a matter of fact, Sweets Edison's last recordings is on my album. He died after we made our album.
Wow. I mean, so, you know, people like Clark Terry is legendary.
All of them are.
And the coolest thing is, I mean, it's kind of like going back in time and having those same people you know, back you up.
Oh, yeah.
That's
well,
weird.
When we did Don't Get Around Much Anymore, which is on my album, Clark Terry played that the first time it was ever played.
That's right.
You know, he came, he told me the whole story about how Duke Ellington, you know, handed him the music, and he said it was sounded a whole lot like another song they used to play all the time. He thought Duke ripped himself off, you know, had no idea it was going to become a legendary song, you know, and in World on a String, I do that song, and Sweets Edison played that with Frank Sinatra every night for years, you know.
Yeah, and of course, Father of the Bride, too, Give Me the Simpler Life and On the Sunny Side of the Street were featured in that.
Right. The album has 17 songs on it. And I recorded 14 new ones, and I took the 3 songs that were on the soundtrack albums of Father the Bride, and I added them to this album. So it's really a collection of all my standards, including the 3 songs from the Father the Bride movies.
You know, it's funny. I sit and talk to my little kids about you know, the great songwriters like Lennon and McCartney, and Burt Bacharach, and people that have been on the show, and you know, you look
Burt's
at
been on the show.
Yeah.
He's my buddy. You know that, right?
Yeah. Well, Burt
he's
is.
Mentor,
we had him on to talk about his the box set they had that they put
out.
I'm sure you've seen that great box set.
My picture's in it.
It's great stuff.
Yeah, my picture's in that box set.
That's right, it is. Yeah.
Burt was my hero, my mentor. He when I started in the business, I came up from Texas and went to work for Scepter Records and as a staff producer. And Burt was just starting out with Dionne Warwick, and became the head of A&R and promotion at a very young age, and I worked with Burt on almost all his hits, and I'd go in the studio with him, and I was a kid, you know, I was like 19 years old, so they would listen to me, you know, and then I'd go on the road and you know, promote the records, try to get him on the radio for Burt, and he and I are still friends to this day. He's one of the true musical geniuses of our time. Burt is like the next generation after the people after the songwriters who wrote these standards. He was still kind of rooted in the Gershwin era, but he was the the last of the great composers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of bridged the gap between contemporary music, you know, in the early 60s R&B, and he still had those classical, you know, roots that the older composers had. He's quite a guy.
You got people like Carole King and Geffen and people like Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil, who also were composing some great stuff back
then. Oh, yeah.
As well.
But they came a little later, you know.
Right.
They came a little after Burt. Barry and I were partners for years. I don't know if you know that or not, but that's why, you know, somewhere out there I told you Barry
mm-hmm.
wrote. But Barry is the next generation after Burt, you know, Barry and Carole King and Neil Sedaka and those people, you know.
It says in your biography that you were a long time associated with Bob Mann. I assume that meant Barry.
No, it was Bob.
Oh, Bob, okay.
Bob is a guitar player,
arranger,
who co-produced my album and is a great musician. He plays with James Taylor. No, it was Bob Mann. But Barry and I were had a company together. We you know, Barry wrote Don't Know Much and Somewhere Out There, and I produced songs of Barry's over the years. I did You Lost That Love and Feeling with Dionne Warwick, which was a big hit again. I did Rock and Roll Lullaby with B.J. Thomas that Barry wrote.
Barry actually had a single that I went and bought of a song he wrote.
What was it?
I can't remember the song's title.
Because I produced a couple of Barry's albums, too. Yeah. And Barry's got an album coming out pretty soon, and you'll be hearing about it, I'm sure. He's got an album, a collection of all his hits that Atlantic is going to release. And I think at the end of January, sort of like that Jimmy Webb album they put out, you know,
right. Yeah.
And with Barry, and he's got a lot of people that have set in with him and sang, you know, with him on his songs.
I'll have to get an interview with Barry.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Call me. I can hook that up for in 2 seconds. See, Barry's a great guy. Barry's an incredible artist, man.
Yeah, he is.
He's written some of the greatest songs. I mean, You Lost That Love and Feeling is the biggest song, the most performed song in BMI's history.
That's right.
It's the most, that song has been played on the radio and performed more than any other song in the entire BMI catalog. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty good, especially when you go to the bank. I would assume.
Oh
that.
Yeah.
Very, very nice.
Oh yeah, right. I don't think we have to take up any collections for Barry or Cynthia.
I don't think so either. Do they still write together, those two?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. They're writing a Broadway show. They've written it, and they're trying to get a cast, and then they're doing a kind of a thing a little like Lieber and Stoller. They're doing a collection of their songs that's also going to be a show. And so they've got two projects they're working on, and they'll always be, you know. I mean, those are two of the greatest songwriters that ever lived.
They are, and if you want to hear some of the greatest music that ever lived, a new standard, Steve Tyrell CD at Atlantic Records. It's available at Amazon CD now, and of course in all the retail stores. It's from Atlantic Records. Go check it out, and relive some of the golden age of music. Steve, thanks so much for coming on the show, and I look forward to speaking to you again sometime.
My pleasure, Mark. Anytime.
Take care.
Take care, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.